All right, go ahead, talk. Say, you're listening to the Word Bros Podcast.
No.
Do it.
No.
Do it. Say, you're listening to the Word Bros Podcast. Do it. You're listening to the Word Bros Podcast. TheWordBros.com. Hey everybody, what's up? Welcome to Word Bros.
Season 2 or whatever.
Yeah, it's season 2. We took a little bit of a break. We're gonna talk about that in another
episode. I prefer the word hiatus.
Hiatus is good. We were on hiatus.
Yes.
We were on a sabbatical.
Oh, that's a good one.
Sabbatical.
Oh, don't underestimate a writer, because they'll come up with weird words for vacations.
We're on a sabbatical. We just didn't record because we had a lot of shit going on. But we
had too much stuff to do.
We're on sabbatical. But we're back today. We have a very talented writer. He's got a book out now from Image Comics called Fair Lady. Kevin met him a couple years ago at Heroes. I'm really excited to talk to him because, so oddly enough, I actually bought this book not realizing that it was the same dude.
Who's going to be on the podcast, because that's how Bob does things.
I don't really pay attention a lot of the time.
Bob is very impulsive, and he's like, oh, this looks dope, and he bought it.
I did.
He didn't realize that I talked to Brian, was like, hey, I see that your book is out and it looks dope. Would you like to be on Word Bros? And he was like, of course I would want to be on Word Bros, because what better comics podcast is there on the interwebs?
There's not one.
There's several, but
none other ones would have them. I think that was the problem. But let's talk to Brian and let's find all out about Fair Lady. Your still face.
Yeah, it's like
quietly judging you.
Yeah, it's like it's an author shot, isn't it? Isn't that what is your author headshot? You're very serious in it. You're like, I'm Brian Shermer.
I have a friend who is her part time. She has a full time gig, but then her part time gig is doing photography.
We went to visit them
over the holidays, and before we got there, she's like, well, what do you want for Christmas? Like, we need headshots. She's like, I got you covered.
There you go.
It
looks like a headshot for an author, or you could sell magic trinkets out of the back of your car. Like, I haven't decided yet. Like,
I think he looks more like a wizard, like a D&D wizard in the headshot. He's like, welcome to my sanctum. Would you like to buy some creepy mystical items?
Do you need any chicken bones?
It is a toss up between those three. Which one actually makes the most money?
I would say a wizard. A wizard makes the most money.
Yeah, that's fair.
Hi, I'm Brian Shermer of Enchanted Wizard Supplies. It's a pleasure to make your acquaintance.
Would you like to buy a wand?
Free shipping on orders over $35.
Well, yes, we happen to have large chicken bones in stock right now, as a matter of fact.
Did you need some back guano to go with that?
Oh, I'm sorry, we are sold out of the, puppy dog tails.
So, Brian, I'm already recording because all this stuff is gold, so I hate to sneak it up on you like that. But, congratulations on your smash hit Image book, my friend. That's wonderful.
Thank you. I'm still loath to consider it a hit, but it has a measurable level of success, and that's cool.
Yeah, I've seen it at a bunch of shops. I picked it up. I haven't read it yet because, as you know, people who make comics don't really read a lot of comics. But it looks right up my alley, dude. Like, this is like high fantasy stuff.
Tell us about it.
Well, let's see. So the original idea was very much high fantasy stuff. The basic idea was, hey, I'm going to do a comic that's, Magnum PI in the Lord of the Rings universe. And, that was, 7 years ago. And over time, it slowly working on it in back corners of my brain. And, you know, Magnum became a woman, and the Tolkien type universe kind of gave way to little bits of everything. I mean, there's a bit of China Mivel in there. There's a bit of some Elric in there. There's some, definitely some Miyazaki, but you know, you're not going to find any, I don't have any elves or orcs or anything like that running around, at least not yet.
Okay. You said Magnum PI. Now, does she have a Ferrari? That's the big thing.
Not that we've seen yet, but that doesn't mean anything.
We need a Ferrari.
Bro. Does she have Hawaiian shirts?
You know, I'm holding on to that for a variant cover. At some point, I'm going to get somebody awesome to come in and do a cover, and I'm going to say, you know what? She needs the Hawaiian shirt, and she needs like one of those mustaches on a stick that she can hold in front of her face.
That would be amazing.
And we'll sell 100,000 copies of that.
I know a guy that knows a guy who could draw that.
I'd be so excited for you. Now, I think the interesting part of that, I mean, it all sounds really interesting, but like, I think something that the listeners could kind of latch onto there is, so you were working on this project for 7 years.
Yes, but at the same time, it's like I was working on it in the back of my mind.
Okay.
You know, it was, I had a notebook from about this, from the same period that just, I think I scribbled this down in a notebook that I was carrying around in the summer of 2011, where I took some time off and went and did a little trekking around Europe, not a lot, but a little. And one of the ideas that I wrote down in there was the, you know, Magnum PI in a fantasy realm. And, you know, there were scores of other ideas that were in there that were just garbage that I pray that I've forgotten. But that one was something that I couldn't let go of, and just slowly, you know, I would just add a note here and a note there. And it wasn't until you know, a couple of years ago that things started to align, and it looked like we were going to be able to do it at Image, that I really had to sit down and like, okay, figure it all out and, you know, throw the kitchen sink at it and see what were the cool things that I liked, about fantasy or, you know, very, very loose sci-fi, that we could play with in that universe.
See, but I think that's important for people to know, because like, it's very easy to get discouraged if books don't come together quickly on any level, even on like a self-published level. Like, you know, if your project doesn't come together in a matter of months or weeks, or, you know, people seem to get like, oh, this is never going to happen. But you worked on this book for 7 years. So, I mean, that's clear. You're clearly playing a long game here, sir.
Oh, yeah. I mean, no doubt about that. And I agree. You, anybody, you know, starting out or even a couple years into trying to quote unquote break in, things take a long time. I mean, it's not like television or movies where it can take literally a decade or more sometimes to get something made. But it's not going to take you 3 months and you're done and you're on the shelves. It's just, it takes a while for sure. But the flip side of that is also true. I mean, I used to teach writing for comics. And the key thing that I tried to impress on the students on day one is, okay, how many people in here, raise your hands, you know, have this sprawling epic that you've been working on, you know, since you were 8 years old, and half the class would raise their hands. And I would say, okay, you're not writing that in here because you're way too close to that. You're way too invested. You're holding on in some cases to things that beliefs you might no longer have, or fallacies of storytelling that might just, you know, it's too big. Which makes me sound like, you know, which makes it sound like I'm shitting on people's dreams, but I'm not.
No, but you need to, though.
But you're being realistic.
Dreams?
Yeah. I mean, yes. Well, I mean, to be fair, before you hopped on, Kevin and I were talking about the first script that I ever read from Kevin was like a 72 page script that he had written. And like the first thing I ever wanted.
For a 22 page comic. It's the first script. Yeah. See, he laughs.
It was like Moore got nothing on you, buddy.
Yeah. And then like, the first thing I ever wanted to work on and that I tried working on was like a 12-issue maxi series. And like, if someone would have told me what you're telling me now, that could have saved me a lot of heartache and pain. So it's good to kind of shit on dreams.
It would have saved me like 3 months.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'm happy to be here. All about the wisdom.
You're a little late, wizard guy.
I'm not buying your fucking stones, man.
It's all right, man, because all the mad money is in comics. I was lying to you from the outset. It's
that's another lie.
I am laying here in my 9-foot kidney-shaped gold pool outside. Two gals, actually, one's a gal, one's a dude with a big gigantic palm fronds, you know, keeping me cool here in the... I can't even keep going with that.
It's but you know what, though? It was a really wonderful mental image there for me.
And the Ferrari is actually yours. It's not hers.
You're dressed like Magnum P.I.
All the time, baby. All
you just got off. You just got off the helicopter.
But Brian Shermer. Bam, 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 bam.
But like so. But using your own advice here, like you had a project that you worked on for 7 years. Like, how did you keep it fresh to you? How were you able to kind of reinvent it? How were you able to kind of not get too close to it?
The easy thing, quote unquote, was that, you know, it was originally just a one sentence notion, and it was in that notebook, and I would just occasionally go back to that and add to it or subtract from it. You know, I had an urgency about it in that I couldn't let it go, so I knew eventually I would be able to do something with it with someone, but I was in no hurry. And I think maybe that's the most valuable thing. I mean, probably the earliest thing I learned in you know, quote unquote, trying to break into comics, was, you know, definitely be passionate about the stuff that you pitch and the stuff you want to do, but don't be so close to it that you just fall to pieces if no one wants it.
So why comics? If you're obviously a teaching writing and comics are like screenplays, why would you choose comics over movies? And I feel like that's a weird question to ask, but we're all comics writers here, so we might know the answer, but I want you to answer this for people who go, hey, I have this movie screenplay I want to turn into a comic. Like,
oh, God, don't do that. I'm going to give you the asshole response first, which is I didn't choose comics. Comics chose me.
No word.
Yeah, sorry. No, in truth, I've always written in one form or another since, you know, as soon as I could write sentences or paragraphs, I was making up stories as a kid. And I did actually, I went the Hollywood route for a while and went, you know, was going down there and pitching screenplays here and there and got close a couple times. And then around the time that things were doing okay, but still not quite great, I met a couple of people that were, you know, making a living, by and large, writing comics. And I figured, well, you know what, let's see what happens with this. Let me give this a shot, because I never wanted to, you know, just write any one medium, but I never thought about comics. And it just kind of, the ball just kind of kept rolling, and it's still rolling today.
That's cool. Okay. Now were all your television and movie pitches, were they also Magnum PI in a wacky setting? Is that what you...
No.
Is that everyone?
I will tell you my one fun story that was probably the closest I got to anything was I was down. I live in San Francisco. I was down in LA, and I was able to pitch to Frank Darabont's production company. And I went there and I had a pitch that I still love. That in simplest terms is zombies on a cruise ship.
Okay.
And I still think it's, I still remember the script to this day, and I haven't looked at that thing in probably 10 years. And that's, I guess the timing's about right. So I get down there and I've got the appointment to pitch, and I already know it's not going to happen. So I get there, I do the pitch, and when it's done, I'm not pitching to Frank, but I'm looking to the person I'm talking to, and I say, look, I know this isn't going to happen. And she just laughs, and we both nod, because it was literally 2 days earlier that he had signed the deal to do The Walking Dead.
Yeah. Oh. All right. That's interesting, because I was going to say, for those of you who don't know who Frank is, he was the director and producer of Shawshank Redemption. He's done a couple other things, but yeah, that was his...
He did the remake of The Night of the Living Dead. Yeah.
Yeah, but he also brought Walking Dead to television.
Correct.
Yeah, he was the original showrunner.
Yeah. That's
when it was good.
So good.
Oh, the hot fire. It's a hot take.
Shots fired.
Hot take.
Oh.
But yeah, so that's interesting, man. And like, and sometime, like, because we felt that way too, because when we were just getting ready to launch the Kickstarter for... Metal Shark, bro. We were fired up. We had been working on this idea for like 2 years. It just was putting and purring along, and then sometimes there was nothing, and we were kind of just getting ready to get our things going. We were like 3 days away from launching. Fuck yeah, we're going to launch this Kickstarter. It's going to be great. Daniel Warren Johnson announced Murder Falcon, and we were like, motherfucker!
Fucking zeitgeist.
but luckily enough, the books were different enough, but it was just one of those things where it's like, this fucking blows.
When you just look at it, like, yeah, when, just looking at the images, because he didn't tell you what the story's about. Yeah. He's just posting images of Murder Falcon. We're like, oh, we're so fucked. It's Daniel Warren Johnson. His art is so good.
I had a similar thing, because when Eric picked up Eric Stevenson picked up Fair Lady. I mean, this is almost 2 years ago now that we got the green light. There was a dearth of fantasy comics at the time. I mean, Rat Queens was still there, Saga, of course, but yeah, what do you categorize Saga as? And maybe one or two others. And as time went on, and it took a while for us to get things going and get into production, and by the time, you know, we're coming out, it's like, Jesus Christ, there's a new fantasy comic coming, you know, almost every week. I was so scared we'd be perceived as kind of this also-ran, but we've been very fortunate.
That's awesome. And I mean, and some of the fantasy comics that have been coming out have been wonderful. Like, they've been really, really good, and it's you know, yeah, so it's got to be even extra scary, you know?
Yeah, that was the other thing. I mean, even before, you know, we were announced, it's like, I'm looking at, you know, I'm looking at Coda from Cy Spurrier and
yes,
Bergara, and it's like, we can't touch this. It's beautiful, cynical, epic. And then, you know, I find out a year ago, January, I saw Kieran in London, and I had to take he was already like dropping hints about what his next project was going to be, and he had posted this photo of this stack of research that were of research books, and it was the entire Lord of the Rings trilogy and this other books about Tolkien and mystery novels. And I'm looking at this going, son of a if he's writing a private detective fantasy thing, I'm done. And so I saw him, and I took him aside, and I said, dude, you got to tell me what this is, because I'm about to, you know, this corporate here. And he laughed, he took me aside, and he gave me the basic premise of Die. And I both breathed a huge sigh of relief and immediately said, okay, I got to read that when it's good to go.
Now, as a creator, how do you find yourselves fighting through that? Like, how, cause I mean, it just so happens that you happen to know this dude, so you were able to kind of pull him aside to find out. But I mean, like, if you're not on that level, like, how do you pull yourself through that kind of emotional roller coaster that is, you think you've got the best thing ever, and then, oh shit, what do we do?
Two things. One, the classic, you know, argument that, you know, no two people are ever going to write. You can give two people or 100 people the same basic story premise, and they're all going to write something different. You know, no two people are going to rewrite, or no person is going to just miraculously write Romeo and Juliet again.
True.
You take solace in that. But then also, if you have the sense that someone is going to be doing something that might be similar to yours, and you've got time, you know, don't second guess yourself, but go back and polish it and you know, and see if what you are, if the choices you are making are the best and most creative choices you can, and you know, raise the bar for yourself. Which sounds horrible, but
yeah, but it does. But I mean, it's good advice. I mean, it's just because you're saying things that sound horrible doesn't mean they're not good advice. Like, stop trying to be so fucking nice to everybody.
I am the prophet of doom.
Yeah.
It fits with the wizard.
Because the one thing I would say about comics is, like, because you still want to see your idea through, but then your big fear is like, you're going to get to a publisher and they're going to go, yeah, we already have a book like that. Or we already have it. Yeah.
Which I think happens all the time, but you never really know it, because all that happens is they reject your pitch.
Yeah.
And you rare, I think I have once in everything I've ever pitched, have I gotten someone to give me, you know, a rationale for being rejected.
Really?
Oh yeah.
We've gotten two rationales. So like,
really?
That was, yeah. Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
We've gotten, it's close to something we already have in production. And another one was, it's not very, we don't see how we can market this. But I look at it the week, we don't see how we can market this as like a generic, like
generic one. We give that to everyone.
Yeah. Oh, sure, sure. Well, to be fair, I'm certainly not going to name names, but there is an editor at a particular publisher who at least three times in a row gave the response of, we are basically something along the lines of, we are looking to solidify our brand or something, you know, something a little too corporate anyway for my taste. But
okay. I mean, we never got that one. We got the, we don't know how to market this. And it was on something that pretty much markets itself. Like we didn't, like we didn't.
That sounds kind of like a bullshit answer.
Yeah. That's what we took it as. Yeah.
That's what we did take it as. Yeah. But, and then,
okay. So it's like, yeah, it's like, okay, either you're shining me on because you don't want to hurt my feelings, or you don't know how to market.
Yeah. I don't think you would freely admit to the second one.
and now it's super successful, so it's like, okay, well then I guess you don't know how to market anything.
No, it's just a bullshit excuse, that's all it is, man.
No, I'm playing. Another hot take.
So you got Fair Lady out right now. The first issue came out recently. The second one I saw drops, what, in a couple days, yes?
Yeah, next, this coming Wednesday.
That's nice. So how long is this thing planned out for? Like, how many issues you got planned out for this?
We got the first arc in the can. Nice. Five issues. And odds are very, very good that we are going to continue.
Word?
Again, sales of the first one were very strong. I mean, to the degree that we, as you know, we got a second printing, which also, second printing of number one, which also drops next week.
That's cool.
Nice.
I had an email from Eric Stevenson a week and a half ago, where he said he ordered an overprint, a significant overprint for number two, because he feels that stores underordered.
Ballin'. That's gonna make you feel nice,
right? Yeah, yes, absolutely. It's always nice to be on the good list at places, and certainly it's nice to be on the good list at Image.
Well, I mean, Fair Lady's not your first comic. Now, I'm familiar with you from another comic that when we met, I told you about that I bought at Hero, but you didn't. I don't believe you had it with you, or it was selling out. But I had bought both the first issue and the trade of Blackjack Ketchum. So yes. can you tell our listeners what that's about? Because it's really interesting.
Sure. Blackjack Ketchum came out about three, almost 4 years ago now, I guess.
Have we met that long ago? Like, geez.
Yeah.
You're making me feel old, Brian.
Imagine what I do to myself. It was classified as a weird Western. It's basically a supernatural Western about a guy named Tom Ketchum, who was an actual outlaw in the late 19th century in the American Southwest, and it follows a fictionalized version of Tom as he looks to, it's been a long time since I've done this pitch. he denies that he is this outlaw named Black Jack Ketchum, and it basically spends a four-issue miniseries trying to prove that he is not this guy, all the while being pursued by all kinds of supernatural characters, including probably most noteworthy, the Dusters, who are basically Old West versions of the Nazgul.
And, wow, that's cool. So, like,
and he has a talking gun. That's what
he has. Talking gun, yeah.
He's
got
a talking gun. That's cool.
Is dope.
You're the guy who got the Western made, because I've heard from everybody and their mother that Westerns don't sell.
And we proved that with Blackjack Ketchum.
Because that's what happened with, and then that was how I talked to Brian. I was like, I have a Western comic. And he's like, really? And he got super interested. He was like, I love Westerns. I was like, I love Westerns. And then all of a sudden it was like, we are instant friends. And
why why don't Westerns translate? Well, I don't understand. What's the big deal? Like, why don't they work in comics?
I think they can work in comics just fine. I mean, I the one I still point to is The Sixth Gun.
Yeah,
that's a great Western.
That ran for years, and you know, Cullen built his reputation off of that. That is one. I think the general perception is that it's old.
It's okay. Old, yeah. It's an old man thing.
Right, and that is probably the same reason that if somebody came forward and tried to do, you know, Prince Valiant, but with, you know, lesser quality art these days and, you know, no fantasy elements, same thing, it wouldn't sell, because it's just, it is perceived as, you know, too old, and it's like, my grandfather would have read this, man.
And the thing I think that Brian and I talked about,
get out of here, old man,
was that Deadwood was dope and people watched it. So there's got to be an audience. It's just not hitting in the comics audience. Comics audiences aren't looking for that per se.
Well, I think part of it. Well, here's the other thing. Yes, Deadwood was successful. Name me another Western TV series from the last decade.
Yeah. That's it. That's the only one.
By extension, I think, you know, if you get A-listers on a Western, you know, if Tom King were to come out next week and say that the next 12-issue maxi series that he and Mitch are going to do is a Western.
It's Jonah Hex.
Jonah Hex.
Yeah.
It would sell out. It would sell out, and they'd win Eisners. But, you know, if anybody else were to come out and say, I'm doing this weird Western thing, snooze.
No, but I think
lucky get picked up anywhere.
What about, I was going to mention Justified. What about Justified?
It's sort of a Western.
Justified's a Western. It's got all the themes.
It's a modern crime Western.
Okay. All right.
It's also got bits of noir in there because he's kind of a noir character. If you want.
Now, what about Copperhead? Would you consider Copperhead a Western?
Sci-fi Western, sure. We did the mashup, you know, for a Western and do, you know, putting like a dreamlike, you know, nightmare type of reality. And I got to itch all of my, you know, my scratch all my David Lynch leaning itches.
Yes.
In that, but you know, it had a lot of stuff going against it. It was.
Do you know what you were missing though? A diner. He laughed.
Coffee. Well, there was no coffee in it. That was clearly the overriding problem.
I mean, that was one of the problems. But I mean, a David Lynch movie needs a diner.
And more often than not.
And that's why we threw one in Metal Shark, bro, just for that reason. That's the only reason why there's a diner scene, because you need a diner scene in every David Lynch movie. Almost every.
There is not a diner scene in Dune.
Thank you.
But there should be.
You know?
Like,
I don't think anyone's ever eating in Dune, which is kind of odd when you think.
No one does.
They're eating the spice. I guess that's all they consume in that.
Well, I mean, the fat Harkonnen guy might eat, but like, and that I'm not weight shaming, but I mean, he's the only one that.
He's not here. He's not listening.
I'm not weight shaming. I just have to say. He's obviously a fat guy with a jetpack. I mean, I'm not trying to be a dick. But
he's going to review the podcast. You know what, Kevin? Fuck you, man.
I mean, I think the guy that played him
it's glandular.
Like, Sting might retweet and be like, fuck you, Kevin. But I mean, you know, I'd be like, you're old, Sting. Shut up. You like Westerns.
But I'm impressed, though, Brian, that you were even able to get a Western, like, picked up. That's you got to look at that as a.
Oh, I'm more impressed because I wrote one.
It was luck to a degree, but when we pitched Ketchum, I actually pitched Stevenson two different things. One was Ketchum, and the other one was some weird. Oh God, it was another bizarre mashup thing of. Like Invasion of the Body Snatchers and Against All Odds or something.
I love that. I'm hearing Phil Collins in my head right now.
Yeah. And it was what I remember thinking back on it now, I love the artwork and kind of hate vaguely what I can remember it was actually supposed to be about. He could have passed on both of them out of hand, but he took a chance on Ketchum and on me I'm grateful for both of those. But then, you know, it took, you know, a couple years before I got another pitch in front of him that he liked. And blissfully, that was Fair Lady.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
And actually,
that's not even your first comic. You had your first comic at the table. I just didn't get a chance to come get it because we didn't really talk about it. And then Heroes gets busy. So when we talked again, I was like, hey, I'm really sorry I didn't come by. And you're like, yeah, I understand. I know how it gets. Yeah. But what was your first comic? It was at the table.
The first, outside of doing little like freebie handout things that, you know, to test the water a couple of years before that, the first kind of long form thing I did was a series called Ultra Sylvania.
There it is.
Which was basically about, you know, taking like the universal monsters, like Frankenstein's monster and Dracula, and casting them as world leaders in 19th century Europe. On the brink of war, and just kind of re-envisioning their worlds and their characters and their supporting characters as through a more political lens, as opposed to, you know, being, you know, creatures hiding in the shadows and terrifying and blah. and that was actually a project that we did as a through an art university here in San Francisco. The Academy of Art allowed us to go in, and this was I was still teaching at the time, but this was something that I brought in as kind of an outside project when a student suggested that I write something that, and then the Academy build a class around it.
Oh, that's cool.
And we proposed it to the director, which, you know, they have directors instead of deans at the Academy, and said, yeah, it's like, I'll write this thing, and we'll, you know, handpick the best students you've got each semester, and we'll do like, you know, 80, 90, 100 pages in a semester, and then at the end we'll put it out online for free, and then we'll do a Kickstarter, and then we'll take it around and promote, you know, everybody involved. And much to my surprise, he said yes, and we got to do that for three semesters, or, you know, a year and a half. So over the course of 2 years, you know, I wrote, I don't know, 200, 300 pages.
Wow.
Worth of content there. And three Kickstarters later, and we had, you know, physical copies of everything. And that was the first stuff I was taking, you know, taking around on the convention circuit and meeting people and you know, thrusting them into the hands of anybody that wouldn't push them away. And
read this.
Exactly.
This is dope. Check it out.
And, you know, and that was the thing. That was the thing that, you know, had to be done. And that's ultimately what, you know, landed me on the radar of the right people, including, you know, Eric at Image. So
there you go. That's nice. Awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And you know, I'm always reminded of, and I don't know how apocryphal it is, whether or not C.B. Cebulski or not, who, you know, says that everybody's story of every time somebody breaks into comics, they fill up the hole so that no one can do it that exact same thing again. And I kind of knew at the time that this was the thing, because no one had ever done this. I could not find evidence of any other, you know, university or, you know, art school that had basically built a class around making a shared universe comic with the students, and then, you know, publishing it and putting it out there. And so when that was, and then when I saw the work as it was coming back from the students, I remember thinking, it's like, yeah, some of this is really good. I think this might actually be the thing that, you know, this might actually be my calling card.
That's nice. Pretty dope. Yeah, that sounds awesome. And here you are now in your kidney bean shaped pool, surrounded by, you know, beautiful men and women feeding you grapes.
And with a theme song, even.
Yeah. Selling magic trinkets out of your car. I mean, you can't get any better than that, man. That's the dream that we all want to live, you know? Selling wizard supplies. Well, issue 2 of Fair Lady comes out in a week. You can go next week and get the second printing. That always sounds nice, doesn't it? Second printing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's awesome, man. So pick up the book, do yourself a favor. Brian, thank you so much for coming on, man. You were a wonderful guest.
Thanks, Bob. Yeah, I think we all get on rather well.
Yeah, we do. And where can we find you on the social medias, Brian?
Let's see. I'm on Instagram and on Twitter, both at Brian Shermer. And then if you'd rather not have if you'd rather a more streamlined appearance of just Fair Lady, I've got an at Fair Lady comic on both Instagram and Twitter as well.
Boom, look at that.
That's great. That's great.
Genius. Well, thank you again for coming on, and we'll talk to you when the trade comes out, baby.
Let's do.
All right, man. That was Brian Shermer. His book Fair Lady is in stores now, and he's the guy who got the Western picked up, and that's why your Western will never get picked up, because Brian's did. So
are you talking to me?
No, I'm just talking to everyone.
Oh, okay.
Because everyone likes everyone.
I was going to cry for a second. And
it seems like everyone who writes comics loves Westerns, but they all know that they can't sell. But Brian got his done, so congratulations.
Nobody told me. I never got the memo, and I did it anyway.
So. I love Westerns. I would love to do a Western.
And we have a Western idea.
So yeah, but
we're going to mess with it.
It's just stupid to even bother with it. But yeah.
No, we'll just pitch it as Metal Shark Bro in the West.
Yeah, Old West. But yeah, so thank you to Brian. He was really great. His book looks really cool. Like, I'm super amped on it. It's definitely something.
It's called Fair Lady.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like he said, a fantasy book with like a detective slant to it. And I've read some of the PDF he gave to us. I'm planning on reading it in physical.
He gave you a PDF?
Yeah, I gave it to you too. I forwarded.
No, you didn't.
I did. I forwarded it to you.
Where
is included in the email?
Where?
Hold on a second. Do I have to look at my phone for this?
I'm looking it up right now. I did not get a PDF. Oh, there it is.
You got a PDF.
All right. You're right. I guess I don't pay attention to your emails because they
forwarded you the PDF. Dickhead. There
it is. I see it. You're right.
I was like, here, read this. And you were like, okay, cool. And then you went and bought the comic. And I was like, you got it for free already.
Well, you know what, Kevin? I'm a patron of the arts, dude.
It's a nice comeback, but it's not true.
I like to support things with money and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I think I don't disagree with you. You are a supporter of the arts with money and
stuff. No. Patron. I'm a patron.
Oh, a patron.
Yes.
Are you a Patreon?
No, I have a Patreon, but I am a patron of
Have a Patreon. Would you like to plug your Patreon?
No.
No?
No.
You don't want people giving you money?
Yeah.
I'll take the money you were going to give to Bob.
I like, I have one for Dork Trek and one personal one, but yeah, but whatever. It's not about that, man.
you have to try and play it off.
But yeah, I'm excited to read this book. It looks really great, and you guys should check it out. Brian was a super nice guy, and he'll be at Heroes just like we will be. So there you go.
And you should come see us all at Heroes. Bye, Fair Lady. Bye, Metal Shark Bro. We love you guys.
Yep. And we will talk to you guys soon. Thank you for putting up with our extended break, but you know, we got stuff going on. We apologize. And we'll talk about, you already heard us talk about the stuff in the beginning of the episode, but we'll, yeah. So there you go.
You'll hear more about that as the weeks go on. We'll tell you all the trials and tribulations of weird stuff that happens in comics.
Yeah, buddy. So thank you very much for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.
You're listening to the Word Bros Podcast, thewordbros.com.